Nice.
Love Talk Radio.
Tonight we're going to talk about the gospel. So we can get some sharing on how to do this. We're going to try out the iPad next week, so it won't be late. But when you get on here, you know, say, how you doing? Hello, how you doing? Share the video. I appreciate that. Definitely. For the first few minutes, we just do a lot of sharing. Get yourself ready. Ready to take go. This one, there's a lot of information that I really want to cover, but we'd be here all night, 4 hours or so, if I cover everything about the gospel. So we're gonna pick a subject matter of one of the main focal points of that's what I'm going to focus there. For God's sake. The very good book of wisdom. So, hey. I'm just sharing on some of the groups that I belong to. Sharing it on a couple of my other pages. And as soon as we get all these shares, then we're going to jump like right into it. Next. How you doing? First. Bye. We got both Facebook and YouTube on. He's got our team. He's the YouTube bro. My God. I'm sharing it. I'll get as many people connected as possible. The way we're going to break this down, we're going to do a little bit of historical background on the Gospel of Thomas first, just so people have a reference, and then we're going to focus on some of the key teachings based off of it. Because as you know, I look at every piece of wisdom, from the Tao to the Buddhist text, the Hindu text, those texts that they don't want you to know about. We really should look at everything as the wisdom for us to learn from, grow from, develop into a better human being. Now, I'm going to give you guys, I'm going to go back to my own. So when I get to the part where I got to read some of these things, I'm going to get that without messing up a little bit. That part is going to be messed up. All right, I think that's all the shares that I'm going to be able to do. Thank you guys, my Facebook fam, got to get you guys centered. I'm a YouTube fam up here. I'm on Blog Talk Radio for the afternoon life. And I do want to, self-promotion always. If you want to support the channel, of course, you got on my Patreon, which is patreon.com/CoachLynn, R-E-N-Z. And also my store, You Are Popcorn. I'm Coach Popcorn. Better go to artwordpopcorn.com. You want to buy some popcorn from me, I greatly appreciate that. The support of the channel as well as the support of my business, I greatly appreciate it. But popcorn you never had, if you haven't had it, if you have had it, I greatly I do a lot of coaching programs as far as from your credit to relationships to personal development, business coaching. And you'll find all of that on coachwomen.com. Now, moving ahead. Oh, I do want to say something. I want to get some comments on what you guys thought about this. So, thank you for waiting. I appreciate that, Paul. It took me a little bit longer to get started. I put on my Facebook page, Instagram, that I was investigating the option of making a CBD popcorn. So, in your comments, when you watch me later, I just want to hear what your thoughts on that. If that's something you believe in person, I had great uses for people who deal with anxiety, depression, seizures, all those sorts of things. Be able to make a good gourmet popcorn treat for people who are suffering through that, and I thought it would be a great idea. So tell me what you guys think. If that's something you'd be interested in. Prison of the Highway. I like that name. So we're going to discuss the Gospel of Thomas today. Gospel of Thomas. And I didn't plug my microphone in, but it's all right. I think I talked loud enough anyway. We're going to discuss the Gospel of Thomas. THC. No, that's not legal in Georgia, and I'm in Georgia. So, but CBD, yes. That's legal in all 50 states, so I want to get your opinion on CBD. All right, when I open up in California, that'd be a different thing. DD Alchemy, how you doing, young lady? How are you doing? So, Gospel of Thomas. Right off the whip, I want to know, like, how many of you guys are familiar with the Gospel of Thomas? If you're familiar with it at all, just, you know, Facebook, throw some hearts, some thumbs up, some whatever. And I'm glad you know, great. If you're, Papa got his book out right now. But Papa's going to be my challenge on the Gospel of Thomas. But if you've heard of it, let me know by some form or fashion if you've heard of the Gospel of Thomas, whether it be, whatever, comments or whatever. So if you've heard of it, that's great. For those who haven't heard of the Gospel of Thomas, what you have, most people know about the 12 disciples of Jesus according to the Bible and the New Testament, right? And one of those disciples, Thomas, right? You've heard of it, great. So Thomas is the one they call him Doubting Thomas, right? After the resurrection, he's the one who didn't believe that that was Jesus touching his hand, showing him the brain. He needed proof. Now, that's an interesting point. We can stick on that point for a while right there, that here's a guy who had been walking around with Jesus, but he still needed proof that that was Jesus in the flesh. So, but we're not, that's not what we're talking about, but that's the guy. That's the guy that they're talking about. That's the guy who this book has been attributed to. And the thing about Thomas, you have to understand his pathway. So after, as the history goes, the story goes, as people provide, after to go and preach all of Jerusalem, right? You got your pen and paper, Craig. They were told to preach to all of Jerusalem. Then, preach to the Hebrews, then go preach to the Samaritans, and then all the surrounding areas and all the nations. Well, if you get the book, that Peter and Paul got into arguments because Paul was straight to the queen, and he's not supposed to be telling them yet. So the whole that man way just to the Jewish people. So there was an argument. Now, about it, Thomas went to Syriac or Syria. He went to teach there. According to the story, he followed the Silk Road to India and teaching all along to India. Now, in Western India, you still have people. You find people who are Christian in Western India. Many of them claim they've been Christian for umpteen generations because they are Thomasinian, meaning that they believe that the Apostle Thomas came out to Western India and taught about Jesus. So they have the Thomasinian teachings. Now, supposedly, there's another route on the way back from India. And that route on the way back takes you around the Arabian Peninsula, then Oman, and you come up to it. Okay? Now, a person could travel in that circle because before this story, before the time frame of Jesus, before the time frame of all these other, the apostles, the Silk Road was already there. The trade route to India was already there. The Greeks had already went all the way out to India and conquered. The Persians had already went out to India and traded. The Egyptians were already in trade with the people in the Indus. So it is very possible for somebody to go from the Mesopotamian area and follow that Silk Road all the way out to India. Now, it is also possible that they can come around the Arabian Peninsula and up into Egypt because the story of Sheba coming up. Now, because Sheba had frankincense and myrrh and a whole bunch of it, it is grown in that over the Oman, Yemen area, so she could have come up through that way. And then you also saw that you had her coming up. And then you also had Alexander, when he left India, he came up through that route as well. So it is possible for someone to have traveled the Silk Road and then come by ship up into Egypt. And up in Egypt is where you get this Coptic Christians. And the Coptic Christian claimed that they had the teachings from Thomas, the Gospel of Thomas. Now, they also had Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Jesus by Thomas, a couple of the Acts of Thomas, and these are all part of the Coptic Christian teachings, also known as the Gnostics. That's one of group of the Gnostics, right? So, so they have these writings. So, in these writings were taught through the first century, second century, into the third century, and to some degree all the way up to the 17th century. But what had happened was is that right around the fourth century, around the Council of Nicaea, their teachings had to go into hiding. They had to go into hiding because at the Council of Nicaea, what you had was Constantine had sided with the Orthodoxy. And understand, Orthodoxy, let's break that word down for a second, ortho and doxy. Ortho means right in Greek. The doxy basically means opinion or thought or knowledge. So right knowledge, right thought, right opinion. So he sided with the Orthodoxy. Now, prior to that, you wouldn't have people running around calling themselves Orthodoxy. Those people wouldn't call themselves Orthodoxy. They all call themselves Christians. Just like you didn't have a Gnostic, you know, the Gnostic church. There were many different reasons. Remember, Constantine called this conference together. I'll link up at the end of this video, if I edit it on YouTube, I'll link up at the top where you can click on and see my video on what really happened at the Council of Nicaea. But he wanted, you know, he had this conversation, he had everybody come together because Arius, Bishop Alexander, the bishop of Alexander, was having like massive issues. But their issues were spilling over into all areas throughout the Roman Empire because there weren't just Gnostics. There were many different variations of Gnostics. There weren't just Orthodox Christians. There were many different variations of Christianity. Like, it wasn't Christianity, it was Christianities, plural, all throughout the Roman Empire, and this was making Constantine feel like a war to break out. People were fighting over this issue, much like people fight today. People want to argue, yell, fight, the same way they did back then, except they had a lot of violence going on. So, because of that, just like today. So, because of all that, Constantine called the Council of Nicaea. And at the Council of Nicaea, the biggest issue they wanted to establish was Jesus' divinity, right? They wanted that to be settled. And the Gnostics had a different viewpoint on Jesus' divinity. The Thomasinians had a different viewpoint on Jesus' divinity. So they lost. Arius showed up and with about 13, 18 other dudes, they beat them down and forced them to sign the Nicene Creed and then expelled them out away from the, had them put away. I've got the words, but had them sent away and excommunicated away from the rest of society because they still did not necessarily agree with what the Orthodox Church was going to teach. So in doing so, one of the groups that had to hide was those who were reading the Gospel of Thomas, the Thomasinians, and one of the Gnostic groups. And they wrote they had a writing, and it was written in three major languages. It was written in Syriac, it was written in Greek, and it was written in Coptic. Now, the version that we mostly have today is the Coptic version. These Coptic versions, which Coptic is an ancient, it's like one of the last Egyptian languages before it converted over to the Arab language. So the Coptic language died out around the 17th century. But they was reading this book, and right around 350, when the Orthodox Church when the Christian Church finally had developed themselves into the Orthodox, and they started forcing people to believe whatever came out of Rome and whatever came out of Alexandria, Egypt, when they started forcing the people through bloodshed to do that, Athanasius had become a bishop of Alexander around this time, right? And right after the Council of Nicaea, and you saw my video about what happened at Council of Nicaea, I told you how Athanasius started writing out, he was in charge initially of telling people when the Easter celebration was going to be done, which was based off the Roman and the Egyptian calendar. He was telling them when that was going to happen, but he also published the canon, a canon that he thought should be the canon, which ended up being the canon eventually, because he did this for like 39 years. So right around 350, when he's the Bishop of Alexander, the Coptic Christians started hiding their work, hiding their manuscripts, because they were being tortured and tormented and killed for not following the Nicene Creed and not following the Orthodox Christian teachings. So they hid it. And because it's arid, it's dry, it was hidden in jars. I'm pretty sure if we keep digging, we'll probably find other versions of it. Right? So when 1935 comes around, and although there were fragments already of this Gnostic gospel, 1935 comes around, and some diggers and a guy who, like, they call him a peasant. I hate that they call it a peasant Egyptian dude. So a couple of these poor kids, we call it a peasant. But a poor Egyptian guy and some other workers, diggers, they find these jars. In these jars, there are like 13 of these books. And they were books. They weren't scrolls. They were books. They were bound. And they found these 13 books, and it turned out to be, and it was near the town of Nag Hammadi, which is called, that's why it's called the Nag Hammadi Library or the Nag Hammadi Codex. They found these books there. And when they found them there, one of the books that stood out the most was the Gospel of Thomas. The Gospel according to Thomas, with Didymus, Judas, Thomas. Twin, Judas, Thomas. Right? So they found it. Oh, interesting side point. Did y'all know that the word Didymus also means balls, like testicles? I thought that was interesting. I've never told anybody else that, but I've always thought that was interesting, so I want to tell you guys that Didymus not only means twin, but in the Greek, it also means testicles, because you have two, and they're the same, hopefully, twin. But it's a tribute to Thomas, the Didymus, Judas, Thomas. Every time you say that now, you're going to think about testicles. I just wanted to mess y'all brain up one time. So you're going to think that from now on. But anyway, so he found these, books, and the Gospel of Thomas was intriguing. It lit the world on fire. When it was first found in 1945, it blazed the world for a while, but then the church got a hold of it, the Catholic Church got a hold of it. They shut it down for a little bit, but then around 1950, 1959, it gets published again. It was in the 1950s. It gets published again in 1959, it goes out big again, and people are, like, digging deep into this because they're saying there was, here's the proof, another esoteric style of Christianity, that Christians weren't all believing the same thing back then. It wasn't this golden era of Christianity, that there was something else. And the beauty of this book, it talks a lot about inner divinity, about inner power, about the kingdom being all around you and inside you. And because of that, people want to head. But it also has a lot, it doesn't directly say, does an ex-Trinity thing where Jesus is like, I ain't part of the Trinity, but it doesn't directly make say he's part of the Trinity. It's kind of like some gray area. One of the main reason why I think this book was also outlawed is because he, in this book, which is 114 things, the Jesus character is equaling men to women, constantly telling dudes, women, women will be brought up to the same status of men, and you got to bring the two together. We're going to cover some of those things. So talking a lot about that, and then it was also talking about you have a direct connect to the Father. You don't need a Savior, that the Savior is inside you. One of the main ones we're going to talk about tonight is a verse that says that talks about. And it's that connection that you don't need this church. You don't need the pastor, the priest, the pope. You don't need none of those people, that your divinity is inside you. And when you start getting that self-knowledge, then you are your own salvation. When you start getting that self-knowledge, you are your own creator, you know, of this world. When you just, it talks about how when you discover the world and you discover it to be a carcass or you discover it to be a body, then you will be able to conform it, and you will see the world for what it truly is. It talked about a lot of the hidden mysteries. Now, I want you guys to understand something. Tonight, although we're going to dive into some of it, I'm diving into it not to convince you of anything. I'm diving into it not to teach you the whole god doggone thing, but for some of you guys who've never read it, never looked at it, who never thought about it, who was told that's heresy, you're going to go to jail, you're going to go to hell, you know, be a child of the devil and all that kind of stuff. I hope to ignite something inside you that says, let me go look at this. Let me go find out for myself. I need to know how for myself. I had a late dinner and I didn't drink anything, so I'll be sipping water. So I want you guys, that's the main purpose tonight, is to get you guys started on it. On this reading. I first discovered the Gospel of Thomas. Whew, man. It was about 1991, actually. That's when I first discovered the Gospel of Thomas. 91 was an interesting time for me. I went to Desert Storm. I was in the Marine Corps. I was on a ship. We were going to go to Bosnia again. We were getting out to the radio in Bosnia. I was very disenfranchised from, I had studied Christianity. I had studied Islam. And I had studied Nwankwo. And I had just been studying the Nwankwo, the right knowledge people. And I had studied the Zoroastrian. And I was really in this funky mood where I was just like, man, this is a bunch of bull. There's no wisdom out here. And then I was handed the Gospel of Thomas from a guy that I had met in Israel about 6 months later. He sent that to me. Blew my mind. Opened up my eyes to see that there was something different that I needed to learn. And kept me on a path. And this book actually kept me on a path of self-discovery. Because then I started seeing everything from a different perspective. I started seeing the Hinduism and the Buddhism from a different perspective. I even started seeing Christianity from a different perspective. I saw Christianity where there is just wisdom. And believe me, then here's the thing. When you go through the gospel, I don't accept all of the gospel tongues as something divine. It is all just wisdom, good wisdom. But as I was also at that time studying the Hermetics, I realized that this knowledge flourished in Egypt with the Coptics because it was very Hermetic, though. Very Hermetic. Let's see. This book alone confirmed what Jesus was saying about the Bible. It's you, not me. Exactly. It does confirm that. It definitely is you, not me. Let's see. Brian says the book of St. Thomas is, I can't say the word because I can barely see it. My contacts are on the way up. Yeah, here's the thing. So, and many people will reject this book because it's not part of the canon. That's one thing I've never understood, right? So you got a bunch of old dudes throughout history who have, for political and powerful power reasons, decided what's canon and what's not. To go back, Athanasius started writing his books, what he decided should be canon. Prior to him, Eusebius of Caesarea was writing what he thought should be canon. For instance, Caesarea thought should be canon. He thought the Maccabees should be canon. But Athanasius disagreed. Pretty much what you got is canon now is what Athanasius believes should be canon. There were several councils where the book of Revelation was not going to be canonized. It was canon. They didn't want it to be canon, especially those of the, not the Church of Smyrna. I don't know why there's an application. There's a church that looks bad with the seven letters that are written to the church. It'll come to me a little bit later. But one of those churches really didn't want the Book of Revelations to be canon because it made that particular church look bad. Laodicea, the Church of Laodicea, when they had a council in Laodicea in 1400, they wanted Revelation to be taken out because the Church of Laodicea looked so bad according to the Book of Revelation. So they wanted it out. Only someone walking around with blinders would say that this book has a purity, right? Because this book has been tampered with, changed, all that sort of thing. So the Gospel of Thomas also has went through that. It's went through redactors. There are three or four major versions of it, and all of them are not exactly the same. It's went through some redaction itself. So what I like to focus on is the part, is what we can see as wisdom. That's why my part canon, there was corresponding criteria required, not because they just pick and choose what they wanted. That's not actually true, Brian Moore, because you're looking at it from a today's eyes going back, not looking at what was happening. I did a video called What Was the Council of Nicaea. The Council of Nicaea, once the ones who were in made in charge, meaning the what became the order, they decided that none of the Gnostic writings would be part of it. Caesar, Eusebius of Caesarea was also to the point where Constantine also agreed with him that if there are four winds or four corners of the earth, they were referring to it in 180. That there are four corners and four corners of the earth, four winds, there should only be four gospels, right? And then they only wanted gospels that put the church in control. So to say that it didn't correspond is not true. And here's one reason why. There are many things in the Gospel of Thomas that does correspond to the four Gospels. Therefore, there are a decent number of Christian scholars who think that the Gospel of Thomas is or was alongside with the fable Qlm that was used to finish off the four Gospels. Recognize that the four Gospels that you have were never complete. Mark is almost complete, except for one. The original versions of Mark, it just stopped. The stone was rolled over and the tomb was empty. All that other stuff that's in Mark wasn't in the original text. It was added later. Just like the story of the woman who committed adultery in John. Originally wasn't in John. It was after John. And they moved it forward in John. It went around. In your own redactors changed it. You got the text, the T text, the D text, and all these other texts that were different, which is why you have two creations in Genesis. So to say that it wasn't in correspondence with, that the Gospel of Thomas didn't coincide, is not necessarily true, because there are many things in the Gospel of Thomas that are very similar. The story of the seed, the sower planting seeds on good ground and rocks and thorns and thistles and all that, it's in the Gospel of Thomas. Also, here, I think Luke is where that story is told. There are other stories that are in the Gospel of Thomas, that are in the in your Bible. Now, the difference is the Gospel of Thomas is not a narrative. It's not a narrative. It's 114 saints. It doesn't say anything about the passion. It doesn't say anything about the resurrection. It doesn't have anything about birth. It doesn't have any of those things. But if it was about correspondence, then most of the other books would be kicked out as well. Because when you look at the lineage of Jesus compared to Matthew, compared to Luke, not saints. Not saints. Mary and Joseph are cousins. They ain't the same. And they could have been cousins. Because, you know, they did the incest thing. Even though the incest spoke an outlaw back in Deuteronomy, I believe. But, hey, you know. So, to cast something out today is merely because you're just following what a bunch of old people kept writing over and over. And even when you look at more recent Bible, when you look at the King James Version of the Bible, King James, and then you go back and you look at the Codex Sinaiticus and the some of the where he wrote them from, there are differences, as I did in my video about the Hebrew Israelites. The Codex Sinaiticus and everything prior to King James said nothing about the children of Israel sailing away on slave ships to Egypt for 400 years. Nothing ever said that. None of the old texts say that. Nothing. There's nothing in there to say that. But King James added it because it was being written in the 1600s. What was going on? Transatlantic slave trade. So we need to justify it. We need to justify that whole thing. To say that there's no consistency, this is why I say that when a person just accepts what their pastor said, accept what people who thought the earth, that if you went 6 miles past the seashore, you would fall off the earth. There's people who thought that the sun revolves around the earth and all the other planets, that the earth was the center of the universe. We're talking about people who thought that there were sea monsters if you went past that 6 miles. These were the people who decided who God was and what God said and what's history and what's not. So, you know, to say, to put so much credibility on those people who were lacking in so many scientific skill sets, who were, you know, thinking that, I mean, you're talking about people who said during the Inquisition, if they thought you were practicing witchcraft, what we're going to do is tie you to a stone, drop you in the water. If you stay on, if you float up, you're a witch. If you don't, then you're innocent. So when they died, they were innocent. These are the people that folks put their trust in today. I was always trying to interest. And it's cool because if that's convenient for you to be blind like that, go ahead, knock yourself out. I care less, really. That's why I say all the time, my channel is for people who are of an open mind. Let's see. So it's, what is the relevant text? All you have to do is just go read the Codex Sinaiticus or go read any of the texts in the Vulgate. If you go look at the Vulgate and Codex Sinaiticus, if you go look at the D text, and that's the primary one. Everything from Deuteronomy, for the most part, comes from the D text, which is the Deuteronomy text, right? So it's not in the D text, which is why, since it wasn't in the D text, it wasn't in the Vulgate, which is why it wasn't in the Sinaiticus, but King James added it. It was added in King James. So if you ask, and that's the weird thing, you asked me for a source, but I said that's the beginning. That's the source. The previous versions, Sinaiticus, Vulgate, D-text. And just go to the D-text. Start there. Start with D-text. If it's not in D-text, then it has to be added by something else later on. Right? And now you know. So they just talk about how your children will be on Google, right? And they'll go to the doorway easily. That says nothing about slave ships and selling away either. You know? But if you want a source, go look it up. Go look that source up. So moving right along into the Gospel of Thomas. I really find the first two verses to be, the first three verses, to have a lot of significance when we are looking at our inner self, when we're looking to grow and grow and become better. And I try to read you guys' comments as you go. Some of you will talk about it, some of you won't. I can help you clear up your transmission. I need that help, you know. And for those who still want to like and stuff like that, let me be very clear. I spent a year with Kevin debating people. It serves no purpose, to be honest. If we disagree, we disagree. It is what it is. Doesn't bother me. You believe what you want to believe. I go and read the text and I see what's there. And if it's not anywhere else, it's not anywhere else. If somebody added it, somebody added it. I don't understand what's so hard to believe about people adding stuff. You know, people act like there's like an impenetrable shield around these things that people can't add stuff. But if I wanted help in that, no disrespect, if I wanted help in that, I would ask for it. I'm not asking. So there's nothing to clear up. If what I talk about bothers you, just like how they used to tell us when we were kids, change the channel. You can change the channel. Nobody's forcing you to be here. So the gospel comes. Let's go ahead and talk about these first three verses. Right? First three verses of the gospel comes. The first one, which is interesting. Oh, and before I go there, it says that these were the words spoken by Didymus, Judas, Thomas, recorded. Some scholars say he's a twin of Jesus. Others say he's just a twin. And Didymus, meaning twin, was just like a nickname. Judas was his actual name, and Thomas was his surname, Greek name. But the first verse says, and he said, whoever discovers the interpretation of these things will not take death. Now, does that mean literal, like death of a physical body? No. Stop my spiritual death, right? You won't take spiritual death if you can understand these things and get beyond, you know, the poverty of your own flesh. The second thing goes, and this is one of my favorite things as far as the gospel comes is concerned. One of my favorite things in the gospel comes is those who seek should not stop seeking until they find. And when they find, they will be disturbed. And when they are disturbed, they will marvel and then they will reign over all. Those who seek should not stop seeking until they find. Meaning that as you go out and you seek knowledge, whatever you're seeking, whatever you're looking for, whatever it is you're striving to come to an understanding or change in your life, you should never stop seeking. You should keep going. That is stuck in a mindset or stuck in a point where you don't think you have anything else to learn, anything else to grow to, is stagnation. And we know that in Hermetic law, either you are vibrating higher or you are vibrating lower. You're either growing or you're dying. You're increasing or decreasing. There is no stagnation whatsoever. And then it says, keep seeking until you find. Never stop. Never give up. Never stop trying to grow. Never stop seeking. Never stop searching. Never stop going after information. Just because somebody brings something to you, don't automatically dismiss it because you never, ever heard of it or if it's something that's new to you. Everything that anybody has ever said to me, I went back and I researched. I didn't just dismiss it. I looked deeper. I looked a lot deeper into it to find out. When people told me about the Connecticut, I went and studied it. When he told me about the cuneiform and Sumerian story, I went and I studied it. When I heard about Zoroastrian, when I heard about Sumerian, when I heard about the Hindu text and the Buddhist text, I went and I studied it. And I kept studying. Right. And I found a lot of these same things in the Gospel of Thomas you will find in the Hindu text. You'll find it in the, matter of fact, you'll find it in the book that we're studying over on Patreon, the Tao Te Ching. Some of these things you'll find in the Tao Te Ching. Right? So you got to keep speaking. Now, it says that when you find, they will be disturbed. Now, understand, you will be disturbed. You know why? Because everything that you have learned, you might have to unlearn. You may have to unlearn everything that your parents taught you. You may have to unlearn everything that the church taught you, synagogue taught you, the mosque taught you. You may have to unlearn all those things. What your culture has taught you, you may have to unlearn all that. Everything that you've been through, all the trauma that you've been through, you may have to unlearn and go through that process of redeveloping yourself and reteaching yourself. But it's disturbing when you have to do that. It's trying. It's a challenge. When you have to go deeper within yourself to get past all the struggle and everything that you learn, that is not easy. That's like saying you got to stop being you and learn how to create and build a brand new you. That's not easy. And you will be disturbed because there's a young lady I was having a communication with, and she was telling me how her son is doing all these studies and realizing all these things that weren't necessarily true, and he's angry. He's very angry about it, right? And right, Papa said it did disturb him, and it was liberating at the same time. And it is. It disturbs you. It causes you to have to search deeper. But then, as it says, after you are disturbed, you will marvel because you'll be amazed at the information. You'll be amazed at what you learn. You'll be amazed at how things that you didn't before, how they are now, how you're receiving them, how that information is coming across to you. And then when you finish marveling, you'll rule over all. Now, this is very hermetic because once you understand the marvel and how the universe works and all this universal wisdom, like Solomon said, nothing new under the sun, you start to know how to work this universe, this world, and how to do it within the confines of universal law. So that you can then create your own universe, create your own life, create your own heaven. We're going to see how in here, the third one, we talk about, let me just read that third one to you, right? It says, Jesus said, if your leaders say to you, look, the Father's imperial rule is in the sky, then the birds of the sky will precede you. That sounds familiar, right? You've seen this similarly in the other gospels. Say that in the sea, then the fish will precede you. Rather, the Father's imperial rule is inside you and outside you. Now, the other ones don't say this far. Inside you and outside you. When you know yourself, you will be known. And when you understand that you are children of the living Father, But if you don't, and you understand your children live in poverty, but if you do not know yourself, then you live in poverty and you are that poverty. So think about that. Think about that. Basically saying that the kingdom is inside you and outside you. It's all around you. It's not in the sky. It's not for later. It's now. It's now inside you, now outside you. But you've been hidden from you. There are many other verses that talk about how when you start to recognize the world, you recognize what's been hidden from you, what they've kept away from you. It talks about how pastors, it says Pharisees, but pastors, priests, anyone who's holding the key, that holds this information, they are like dogs who are in the pen to guard the cattle, but they don't eat, nor do they allow the cattle to eat. It says that the Pharisees are the ones that hold the keys, but they do not open up the books or open the knowledge up to the people. They keep it for themselves. Even some of the early church fathers, like Origen, talked about how he considered of knowledge, that he was of knowledge, base knowledge for everybody else, and those higher levels should have this secret knowledge. So all the public gets this knowledge, but he and the other higher ups, they get this secret knowledge. So, but what he's saying here is that it's inside you and it's outside. This is very hermetic. This is very much what is taught in the hermetic laws as well. This is why I believe it thrives so well in Egypt, in the Coptic, because of that. That is incredibly hermetic in its teaching. And that you have really, and the only way to do that is knowing yourself. You really have to know yourself, be honest with yourself. There are many other verses in here, many other pieces of story, topics of wisdom that we talk about having that inner knowledge, that gnosis. This is why I said that the Gnostics were of many different variations. It wasn't like the one Gnostic church. There were many variations. Even Irenaeus had a variation of, Arius had a variation of the Gnostic churches. But he talked about that quite a few times. He says in 5, know what's in front of your face and what is hidden from you will be disclosed to you. For there is nothing hidden that won't be revealed. That everything is for you, right in front of you, that all you have to do is look for it. Be open to it. Now, when you're open to it, when you're saying that, I know, and this is right because I had an experience. I had an experience with Jesus. I had an experience with Muhammad. I had an experience with Allah. I had an experience with Krishna, with Brahma. I had an experience in the temple, in the Buddhist temple. Everybody has had experiences. Everybody's had experiences. Good experiences, bad experiences. But everybody has had experiences, and experience doesn't precede the other person. And matter of fact, let me tell you why it doesn't supersede the other person. There is another one in here where it talks about the kingdom. Let me see if I can find it real quick. There's another one. Yeah, this one. Right? This is 76. And actually, 76 and 77 and 78, but we just don't do one now. Because they all are very similar in meaning. And we got to break that down. He says that the Father's imperial rule is like a merchant. No, not that one. That's not the one I want. No, that's not the one. Because it explains it very perfectly. 76, 77, 78 are good. But there's another that three-course one. Oh, maybe it was that one. Oh, man. I got a little distracted right there, guys. But I'm going to paraphrase it since I can't find it immediately. But it says that the kingdom, the Father's kingdom, oh, yes, it's 90. The Father's imperial rule is like a woman who took a little leaven, put it in the dough, and made it into large loaves of bread. Anyone who has two ears had better listen. What you think about that? Good evening, how you doing, Ms. Brown? But Think about that. A woman who had the kingdom is like a woman who took a little leaven. So a little bit of leaven is like the kingdom, right? And she did in the dough, and she made many loaves. So she made many loaves like a little leaven. There are many different variations of wisdom that are talking about the kingdom, about getting to the kingdom, about understanding who you are, your inner knowledge of self, know thyself, and that gets you to kingdom understanding. That gets you into the heaven on earth, the heaven that's all around you and inside of you. 97, the father was like a woman. And this one is interesting because I was listening to one so-called scholar read this, and he was like, I don't know what it means. Which is not that he got to know what everything means, but I just found it interesting. He was sarcastic in his whole speech. He's evidently Christian, and he doesn't like this book, so he was very sarcastic in his entire lecture. But this one, the father's imperial ruler is like a woman who is carrying a jar full of meal. When she was walking along a distant road, the handle of the jar broke and the meal spilled behind on the road. She didn't know it. She hadn't noticed a problem. When she reached her house, she put the jar down and discovered it was empty. So as she walked, the meal was spread out all along her path, meaning that the knowledge and the wisdom of the Creator, this universal knowledge of how it has been spread out. It's spread out in Buddhism. It's spread out in Hinduism. It's spread out in Zoroastrianism. It's spread out in the Anunnaki. It's spread out in Christianity. It's spread out in Islam, Judaism. It's spread out in the Hopi Indians, the Aztecs, the Mayans. It's spread out, which is why there's certain core wisdom, pieces of core wisdom that everybody seems to know, that everybody seems to talk about, that nobody left out with. That information just kept being spread. Know thyself has been taught all over the place. Exactly. It's pieces of the puzzle. It's kind of like when two people come together, right, in a marriage. You're two pieces of a puzzle. Different shapes, but you fit perfectly together. When you can read between these, then you are putting the puzzle together, the big picture of the kingdom. I've missed a comment here. If you claim that the King James Bible shall represent your Bible translation for you, you say, read the same apparent you would not necessarily equipped. You need to go back and watch my video on the Hebrew Israelite. I'm not going to that tonight. I'm not dealing with distractions of that nature. But you can go read that. Go watch that video about the Hebrew Israelite. That's simple enough. Let's go read the details. So, as we understand this, looking inside yourself, understanding that inner knowledge is what brings you into understanding what is this. But there's a power that you have to have within yourself. When you discover yourself, you discover this power, right? And that power is in how you speak and how you talk, how you move, and how you act, right? I missed a comment. Let's see. I'm not a Hebrew Israelite, but y'all would avoid it if you were. Not really understand what you mean by that one. It's not about you being a Hebrew Israelite. It's just the fact that that's not what we're talking about. I was just making a reference to that, but that's not what we're talking about tonight. And people often try to distract the conversation with things that we're not talking about. So if you want to talk about that, go look at my video on that one, and you're good to go. And maybe then we'll problem share it in the future. We'll cover that again, but not tonight. So anyhow, so you have a power within you. There's one thing they said in 14, said that if you fast, you will bring sin upon yourself. And if you pray, you will be condemned. And if you give charity, you will harm your spirit. When you go into any region and talk about on the country, people will take you in, eat what they serve you, and heal the sick among them. After all, what goes in your mouth won't defile you. What comes out of your mouth will. Now, in all of that, the main thing I want you to understand is what comes out of your mouth is what defiles you. It's not what goes in. It's not the things you eat. Now, of course, our bodies are designed to eat certain ways. There are certain things in our food system that can harm us, so you do want to take care of the inside. There's another verse that talks about why do you wash the outside of it? Why do you not wash the outside of yourself? He who made the outside, the inside of the cup also made the outside of the cup. So So if you're going to take care of the outside of the body, take care of the inside of the body as well. So you should do that. But it is the words of your mouth. And when you don't know the power of your words and your intentions, then you are lacking your ability to create and to be a master over this world. Remember, I said that there's verses in here, there's like three or four that talk about the fact that when you discover the world, you discover a carcass, you discover a body, a dead body. That there's another one where it talks about not carrying a lamb, and said that he will, that if you allow others to control you, you become dead like the lamb as well. You become a carcass if you allow the world to devour you. Because he said he'll kill the lamb, he won't eat it while it's alive, and then the lamb will become a carcass and will devour it. In the same way, you get the world will devour you and turn you into a carcass. Yeah, we're having a serious deep dive into the Gospel of Thomas on here. So you got to be mindful of the words you say. Oftentimes when people go and they pray, they're fasting, they're praying, but their intentions are filled with doubt. There's another verse in here that talks about the fact, similar to what you already read in your Bibles, where it says, you know, if you have the faith of the mustard seed or two come together, I'm in their presence. But it says that you make the two as one. And tell the mountain to move, the mountain will move. Now, understand, making the two is getting your heart and your mind as one, getting your male energy and your female energy as one. And the reason why I say that one is because just like the last verse, just like the last one, I believe it's the last one, he says, Simon Peter said to them, make Mary leave us, for females deserve life. And Jesus said, look, I will guide her and make her as you male, so that she too may become a living spirit resembling males. For every female who makes himself a male will enter the kingdom of heaven. And that's not to say that transvestites or things like that. It's not saying you change your sex. But what he's saying is talking about your energy, your being, your masculine and your feminine becoming united, raising the kundalini energy. But your mind and your spirit coming together in unity. Just like if you have two people who are praying and asking for the same thing, trying to manifest the same thing, but one person has doubt and the other person actually believes, nothing's going to happen. Both people need to be in uniformity with one another in order for that to occur. But you got to be in uniformity with yourself before that occurs. You can't sit here and say, I'm going to manifest a business. I'm going to manifest that. I'm going to manifest that. But you're out of sync, out of unity with yourself. You're overly overly feminine, you know, you're void of either one. You know, you really have to get in order and caught up. I printed out the Gospel of Thomas to make it easier for my reading because my book is too small without my blue glasses. So you have to understand that. Now, as far as being able to utilize that power, like I said, it's all about knowing the inside of who you are. There's another verse, verse 70, where it has Jesus saying, if you bring forth what is within, what you have will save you. If you do not have that within you, what you do not have within you will kill you. It's all in you. You have the power to change your life. You have the power within you. You don't need, see, that takes away from the power of the church. That takes away from the power of the pastor. That takes away from the power of the priest and everybody else, because it's like Marcus Aurelius said, at the end of the day, it's up to you. At the end of the day, it's you. Nobody, there's no need to go to confession. You need to run up to the altar. You need to, no. You got to find how to communicate with the universe, with yourself. You know, it talks about how the wealthy will reign over the earth. And it said the wealthy should reign over the earth, right? And the reason why the wealthy should, and it doesn't say earth, should reign overall. And the reason why the wealthy is going to reign because the wealthy will understand how to utilize universal law without breaking universal law, how to use natural law without breaking natural law. Now, does everybody get to that position and then lose themselves, lose their minds? Do people do things that we perceive to be bad, wrong, evil? Sure, they do. course, no one's perfect here. But lacking in themselves are utterly lacking. So some people are still going to know how to use universal law, but still be lacking. They'll find themselves lacking because all they have is knowing. All they have is they understand, but that's it. Let's see. I'm just going through. There's another one about unity that I said. Jesus said, two will recline on the couch. One will die. One will live. Right? Two. If folks were to get a hold of this book, it will challenge everything. I wonder if it was. Yeah, it had to be taken out. It would challenge too much stuff. This is why Arius had to be excommunicated from Rome because he was too many people were following. And he was in this Egyptian area. And I said, what was that? Oh, two will recline on the couch, one will die, one will live. Salome said, who are you, master? You have climbed onto my couch and eaten from my table as if you are from someone. Jesus said to her, I am the one who comes from what is whole. That was the name of my father. She said, I am your disciple. He said, for this reason, I say, if one is whole, one will be filled with light. But if one is divided, one will be filled with darkness. So you have to become whole. It's just like in a relationship. If you are in a relationship and if the two of you are whole, in sync with one another, in a relationship, you will show light. But when the two of you are not whole in a relationship, you will find yourself in darkness. Your relationship will be in darkness. So you have to become whole within yourself. If you are fractured, if you are broken, if you are shattered, then you have to know thyself to become whole within yourself so that then you can shine your light. Shine your light so that your light shines, so that the candle from your light shines and you are not in utter darkness. So it's about really understanding who you are, who you are. Man, there's like just so many, there's so much in here that we can go through. I know I paraphrase a lot of these things. It's like 56 is the one that whoever has come to know the world, whoever has come to know the world has discovered the carcass. And whosoever discovered the carcass of that person, the world is not worthy. So the world is not even worthy of you once you discover this information, once you know this, and you start internalizing. Now, here's the thing. Like I said, you can't just know. You got to internalize it. One of my favorite verses is verse 8, right? Verse 48 says, if two make peace with one another, in a single house, they will say to the mountain, move from here, and it will move. Let's say you got struggle in your house. You got anger in your house. You got division in your house. If you and your mate come to and y'all come to agreement with one another, then whatever troubles you're suffering through, whatever you're dealing with, you will tell it, you'll have that power to tell it to move, and it'll move. Right? Because you'll then also be taking the right action toward it. If you are struggling with a brokenness inside yourself and you tell it to move, it will move. But you have to come into unity. This is where the Hermetic talks about in order to create anything, it takes both male and female. That the law of gender says it requires both male and female in order to create, in order to birth anything, male and female is needed. So, this is why I know the Coptic Christians really took hold of this because it is so hermetic in the teachings from the Emerald Tablet and the Kabbalion. You know the Kabbalion was written much, much later. If you do that, come together in unity within yourself and come in unity in your household, then there's nothing that can stop you. Nothing that can stop you. What do you say? Teach brother being in touch with yourself is regardless of outside. Right, regardless of the outside, no, you're exactly right. I know I'm missing some of you out there. 107 reads just like the Bible. I forget what book.
Let's see, 107. Let's go. All right, because we're going to cut this short in just a few minutes. All right, we're not going to keep you guys all night. All right, 107. you know, these eyes ain't working too well. Got my glasses. Jesus said, the father in the parable is just like a shepherd who had 100 sheep. One of them, the largest, went away and left the 99 and looked for the one until he found it. And he went and looked for the one until he found it. And he had toil. After he had toil, he said to the sheep, I love you more than the 99. And yeah, there is a verse in the Bible like that. That's all I think. This is why they thought that this might have been the cue. A lot of scholars think that this might have been the cue. Some think it might have been the cue. Some think it was alongside the cue. And the cue is the cue element, which is what they use to finish off the other verse, the other Bible, the other, not Bible, the other book. So, in short, I hope that this brief breakdown of the Gospel of Thomas, we actually covered a lot of information in the Gospel of Thomas. We covered some, like, the basic premise, you know, knowledge of self is vital in order for you to discover the kingdom and everything that is hidden. That once you discover that and discover the trueness of the kingdom, that you will be reigning and mastering like what it is to choose, because you've gotten your masculine and feminine to come together in unity, that you have unity in yourself, that you are not running after things that are outside of universal law. So you understand cause and effect. You understand the law of gender. You start understanding that when you fix things in the above, that it affects everything in the below. And the below also affects the above, that you have it. When you get into the right mindset of asking for things pure of heart, but being in the presence of the kingdom. Like the king, it tells you over and over, the kingdom is not in the future. Kingdom is now. So it is now that you can have great health in your life. It is now that you can have healing in your life. It is right. The Tao talks a lot about this. Buddhist, Hinduism. But you can have all these things now, but you have to be in that presence. Now, I know a lot of churches are teaching that today. They're telling you that you have to believe in it as if it's already here, but they don't teach you how to do that. They don't teach you how to believe and how to know it as if it's already, how to be in the presence of it. It's understanding that, time is just a circle, and you can pick any point of the circle that you want, that you are in the now of it. And in order to do that, if you've seen some of my meditation videos, I tell you that you have to be able to know it through all your expressions. Know it in thought, know it in smell, know it in how it feels, and breathe it in. Like when you meditate, already be in that state of knowing, right? Like, let's say you want a car. Feel the car, like feel yourself driving the car, feel yourself being the car, all those kind of things. Just by putting that thought into the atmosphere, putting that thought, that energy out, everything starts moving in that direction. You know, so I'm telling you that if the Gospel of Thomas is getting you into that mode and telling you how to get into that mode and to do that. So, guys, this has been great. Golgotha means the place of the skull, and you must be reborn in your mind. Exactly. You must be reborn in your mind. Reborn. And here's the thing about it. It says being born of water, and many people just go to the womb of a woman when they talk about being reborn of water. Understand that your brain sits in the fluid, right? So your brain must be reborn in the water, born out of that water, right? The one who finds truth moves fast. Exactly. Everyone is writing. Exactly. You gotta move fast. You gotta get reborn in your mind. Get reborn in your heart. There's fluid in your heart. The blood reborn. Get reborn in all your energy. Your chakras are like pool of energy that needs flow. So you gotta get that rebirth of the mind. Let go of the things. Be willing to unlearn everything you've been taught, and to seek out just truth. Like that second one says, keep knocking. The other one say, knock, and the door shall be open. Just keep knocking. Don't ever stop knocking. Don't ever stop seeking out information and learning and growing.
continue to grow, continue to grow, continue to look for ways to expand yourself, look for opportunities to gain new knowledge, new information. Don't be afraid of those things. And already be in the presence of it. Always be in the presence of it. You know, oftentimes I sit in meditation, seeing my life as already how I want to be. So that's how you guys have to be. Now I'm going to go ahead and call this an evening. I really appreciate you guys. I really enjoyed this one. The Dr. Thomas is one of my favorite books to read and study because of all the information and the great wisdom that comes. Like I said, it's been redacted just like any other book, so I don't take it as something that was written by God, but it is a great book for studying and understanding the wisdom of how you have life and grow in life. So y'all have a great day, and remember, you have to free yourself to be yourself. Because your greatness is non-negotiable. In the YouTube video, give me 24 hours, and I'll link up the other two videos that I talked about earlier so you can see the video about what happened at the Alpha Phi Field, which will give you a little bit more information on it. And I look forward to next week. Next week, guys, we're going to talk about polygamy. We're talking polygamy next week. That's been an interesting conversation I've seen on Facebook all week. So we're going to talk about polygamy. So y'all have a great day. And I'm going to start signing off on all these. I'm going to take a minute for each one of them to sign off. We're going to talk about it. So make sure y'all here for it. Call your friends. Call your mama now. Get everybody. So we're going to see how that goes. And Blog Talk.